The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia El Khoury. And today I'm really, really delighted to be joined by Paul Kershaw, who is the head teacher of Stags St. Albans Girls School right here in St. Albans. Paul, thanks so much for joining us on The Parents Show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Now, Stags is one of the many, many impressive schools we have in our area. Tell us about your journey and how did you get to Stags?
So I like to say that I'm on my second teaching placement for training, but there's a background behind that that I will explain to you. I was teaching English as a subject and as a foreign language in Japan, and I came back to the UK and did teacher training and did a PGCE at University of Hertfordshire. And my first placement was in another St. Albans school, and my second placement was at Stags in 2010. And I've been there ever since, and I was head of school in Easter 2023 and then head teacher from January 2025.
Oh, fantastic. So it sounds to me like you very much have your heart at Stags. Oh,
very much so, yes.
And so you've been head teacher for coming up to 2 years.
Yeah, it's complicated because of the trusts that we're in. Yeah. So very lucky to be in the Ambition Education Trust, 10 schools across the local area, all of which are amazing and work very closely, collaboratively together. And then previous to that, we were in a smaller trust. So I had a role inside that trust. And then as we've got into the merged trust, I've become head teacher.
Fantastic. And well, belated, but congratulations for getting the position. I can imagine you're relishing the job. When you've been there for so long, to get to be part of the leader, to be the leader of the school, must be really fulfilling.
Absolutely. And I think I'm very lucky with the timeline as well, because when I was deputy head teacher, much of our challenge at the time was about COVID and about remote learning and about technology in classrooms. So I think that I'm very lucky coming into perhaps the era of AI in terms of technology, that's where we are in our context.
It is AI. It's the new swear word, isn't it, really, when it comes to education, I think. And I'm going to come back to you on that. But if somebody, and I don't know how, if you didn't know anything about Stags, how would you describe the school to them, Paul?
That's a really good question. I think primarily we're somewhere that really celebrates the diversity of our school community. And I think that we make sure that everyone who is there feels that there is a place for them, where the outcomes are very, very high. And what I think that our emphasis is on is making sure that we're really preparing all young people for their next steps, whatever they may be, whatever phase they choose or direction that they'd like to go in.
Brilliant. Oh, it sounds lovely. And of course, like through the years, I've met lots of students and you can see, you know, from talking to them that they're happy, confident girls who are delighted to be at that school. Can you tell me what do you want for your students? What's your dream, your vision, your goal?
So it's something that I actually say to Year 6 families when they visit the school is that our 8 houses are named after inspirational women, all of whom have been really successful in their fields and broken through glass ceilings. And it's something that we want to make a realistic opportunity for all the young people in our schools, that whether it's an interest that they come to us with or one that they get whilst they're with us, that it's something that perhaps they can forge ahead and be that expert or be that leader of in whatever field that is in their own futures.
Oh, lovely. And I'd say there's a lot of parents listening to that going, yes, please. That sounds perfect. And tell us what elements of the school. It's a big school and there's a lot going on. What elements are you most proud of?
That's a really good question. So you're quite right. It is a big school. It's almost like a time machine because you can walk through the elements of the school that were built in 1950 when the school first moved to its current site on Sandersbury Lane, up into new buildings that were built within the last 12 months. And so I think that the actual facilities itself are to be commended because every time we've needed something, then we've added to the school. We now have been in 8 form entry from year 7 right up to year 13 this academic year. And so that means that we have our our English block is 7 years old. And we've also, in the last couple of years, added, we've had a second dance studio, so we've got a performing arts space, sort of adding to that performing arts element. So I think the facilities and the site itself are to be commended. But if there's one aspect that I think really defines what Stags is at its heart, and that is making sure that we're concentrating on the well-being of every young person, because in order to learn well, I think you've got to be happy first, and you've got to be making sure that you're enjoying school. And so we really focus on enrichment that complements the curriculum, but we focus primarily on making sure that all of our learners have the highest levels of well-being.
I think it's such an important thing, and particularly for teenage girls or young girls, young women at the moment, I think well-being is the key to success, really.
And I think that something we're very fortunate to see every day is that the students really take care of each other in that respect. Student leadership is something that we feel very strongly about. Where we are in the academic year, our year 11 students have just become prefects, kind of modelling and looking after for younger students in terms of their aspirational role model. But equally, we're very lucky with our sixth form leadership team and the head students in our current team, and really that what we've going on for all the time I've been at the school, have really made sure that in addition to their own studies, that they're making sure that they're leaving Stags a more exciting place than it was when they became head students themselves.
That's a lovely idea. And what other, I'm trying to think of the word, is it techniques or a kind of mechanisms have you got in place to protect the well-being of the young women in Stags?
So it's a great question. So I think that what is so important is that everyone gets support in a way that best befits them and their context. So it might be that a young person in small groups gets support or help, or they're from a form teacher. It might be that they have a member of teaching staff that they feel they can talk to. It might be that everything's going well for them in some respect, and they would just like one person to speak to about other aspects. We've just finished at the moment our senior leaders meet with year 9, 10 and 11 students at regular intervals throughout the academic year to make sure really that there's nothing else that can be done for that young person than is in place, so that we're making sure we're not missing anything. But that's one example of the multi-layered approach that we have, from our student support office, which has our student support officers in, as well as our attendance officer looking out for all young people, through to our study support area for our sixth form, making sure that people have an independent place to learn. We really think about the spaces in the school to make sure that we're generating something where there's someone for everyone to thrive.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, there's a lot that's outside your control, isn't there? I mean, it's a very challenging time to be educating young people, isn't it? With social media, I think that's probably one of the biggest buzzwords at the moment. Can you tell us a little bit about the kind of challenges, insofar as you can, the challenges you're seeing and how you and your teachers are addressing them?
Yes. So we, in addition to our academic curriculum that I mentioned earlier, we also have our pastoral curriculum. And that not only takes the form of our form time every day from year 7 up to year 13, and the content of which we really carefully design on a year by year basis, looking really at society and what is needed in that academic year for those young people for that year group. But we have some kind of overarching programs as well. So Stags Talks is something that we're really proud of in the school, and it's something that we've worked with other schools on locally as well, and through Hearts for Learning. And the premise is that it should be that any young person that wants to come and talk about something that they've seen on the news or something that they've seen online that they have questions about, that they have a safe space to come and talk to other students and members of staff about whatever concept that is. And it might be that that just raises questions that then teachers consider and go back to those young people, or it might be that something that other young people have an answer to at that time, but it should be seen as a safe place where they can ask questions freely. And it's something that we started now about 5 years ago, and there's a meeting every week for students across all year groups. And for example, this week's is about misinformation and making sure that what we see online is real, and making sure that perhaps we're working with our families to make sure that we're not accessing content that we might not be ready to see or that we should be seeing. But it's become such a popular aspect of our pastoral curriculum that now it happens in a form time for every single year group from year 7 up to 13, so that there should be an opportunity, if anyone sees or hears about something that they don't know about, that they get to ask a colleague about, who will either be able to talk to them about it then or come back at a more suitable time.
That's fantastic, because it is. It's a very difficult time for parents, for teachers, to navigate how to manage social media. And of course, there are initiatives at the moment to try and ban social media for under 16-year-olds.
Yes, and we have had some updates on that aspect as well. So we've always had a situation with mobile phones at Stags during my time at the school, where mobile phones are kept in lockers throughout the school day. And I think that we've now moved away from it being that they can be used before and after school on school site, to that they can't be out at all on school site within the school gates. And so I think it's really important that we advocate for a safe school where a young person can have a smartphone if that person's family has chosen that to be their context. Equally, they can have a non-smartphone or no phone and still be able to access all of the learning and enrichment opportunities as every other young person. I think that the other aspect of that, that kind of earlier I talked a lot about support, but I think that what really underpins both this aspect, if we're talking about social media or mobile phone usage, as well as support for students, is that we really pride ourselves not just on learner voice with young people and feedback, but also communicating with parents and carers. And there are a number of in-person opportunities to do that throughout our academic year. One of my favourites, which I'm completely biased about, is that we have a parenting carer book group where we meet half-termly and either talk about a non-fiction or a fiction book that we have looked at, and often they are relating to education or the context for our students, so that we can talk with parents and carers about something that is impacting our society and hear their opinions on it as well.
That's a wonderful idea. It's refreshing to hear. It's about books and there's no mention of a screen.
Well, I'm a recovering English teacher, so it's useful. I think that the reason I secretly love it is because I get to actually talk to parents and carers about the content of a book. So maybe there's a little bit of sneaky English teaching caught in there. But it is something that the attendees are very positive about as well. I think we all really enjoy it.
That's wonderful. And it's a tricky world to navigate right now, and it's brilliant to hear. It really sounds like it's top of your priorities to manage this, because I think the excuse of needing a phone for schoolwork during school does undermine a no-phone policy a little bit. So it's great if it's just off the cards from the beginning
Absolutely.
Of the day to the end yeah. of the day.
As soon as you're within the school gates, it can only be seen if it's literally being put into a locker, or if it's in one area of the school and it's at the end of the day about being contacting home to be collected. Other than that, then it's in lockers all of the day. And I think that links, earlier I talked a little bit about the technology that we kept. We had lots of COVID keeps, including technology, and we have a system where all students in year 7 up to 13 have a device with them, so that they have access to all of our learning platforms online, and that negates the need for there to be another mobile device with them because they already have a school device.
That's brilliant. And I love that COVID keeps. I haven't heard that before. It's good.
Well, there are lots of aspects, including some of our internal online meetings still take place because they're time savers when colleagues are all over different places of the school. But I think that it was important as we came out of COVID to think about some of the forms that had accelerated, such as Google Classroom and lots of our online learning platforms that we still have.
Yeah, and my children's school have retained parent consultations online, and I have to say it's great. You know, it makes the most of the parent the teacher's time, and you know,
yes.
we're all aware of how busy their days are. So
we've done the same.
Right.
Our attendance for consultation evenings has risen up to the mid 90% for every single meeting because they're online. But we try and make sure that we still are meeting families in person by having an information evening for every single year group from year 7 up to year 13 during the academic year, so that families can come in and meet us face to face as well.
That's lovely. Yeah, that's a great opportunity. So I think, you know, everybody has an opinion about all boys' schools and all girls' schools. And, you know, I don't know much about kind of theories of education, but I've heard of the Diamond School of thought, where you keep them up, young people apart up until GCSE and bring them back together again. I'd love to get your thoughts. What do you think about all girls, all boys and mixing?
That's a really good question as well. I went to an all-boys school. I went to Verulam School. So I think that I've got that context for single-sex at St Albans Education. But irrespective, I think it's really important to advocate for a choice. I think that families know the young person that they are taking around schools in year six or year five more than anyone else does. And if they are in a mixed setting and it feels like the right school for them, then I think that it's useful that families advocate for that. But equally, if they're in Stags or in Verulam or a Loretto or one of the other single sex schools in the local area and it feels like the right school for them, then that should be advocated for as well. We are very fortunate because we do have a boys school in our trust that there are lots of opportunities for social events and for other collaboration, including academic competitions that we do throughout students' time in the school. And we have upwards of 40 consortium students coming in from five other sixth forms into our school as well. So that we do have a mixed sixth form. So it's normalised for young people to see boys and girls in the corridors from that context alone. But equally, we get the benefit and the choice of having a single-sex environment. I have visited mixed schools as well, where they have separated by sex for GCSE teaching as well. And it's been really interesting that they've recognised the benefits of that, even inside a mixed school setting. So I think it's just got to be the right thing for that young person.
Yeah, it's really interesting experiment, actually, isn't it? I suppose it's that distraction element, isn't it, about bringing boys and girls together.
Girls are very adequate at distracting each other as well without there being any boys in the room.
that's brilliant. So I'd love to know, like, it is so difficult for parents to navigate the idea of choice of school. Well, the truth of the matter is, a lot of it goes on proximity to the school, but there are still elements of choice and important things to look at when you're picking a secondary school for your child. I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
So I think it's so important to take that young person into the school and, for fear of repeating myself, see them interact with the other students and the older students and the guides and the staff and see how they interact with those people and how their questions are asked. But also, I think sometimes it's a feel for the school. And we are very lucky in St Albans in that really there are so many amazing schools that a young person could choose to go to. And as you say, there are different reasons for going to those schools. And sometimes it's on proximity, but hopefully sometimes it's on choice as well. And we do get a lot of students who come in for open day, open evening, and they come in on an open morning as well, and they say that they've chosen Stags just because of how it feels when they go around the space. And I think that also has something to do with linking to what I said earlier, that we really do promote those vocational pathways and enrichment pathways for girls and women above everything else that we do. And I think that resonates with some 10-year-old and 9-year-old girls.
Brilliant. And we spoke about AI right at the beginning, and I'm sure it's one of the banes of teachers' lives at the moment. How are you managing AI, the goods and the bad?
It's really interesting. I think that when AI pros started being produced in general as part of our society, I did wonder the impact it would have on education. But in my role, and perhaps because, again, as someone who has those English teacher traits, I think that I've very quickly been able to recognize when something is AI generated or not. And obviously there are actual generators, you know, checkers as well for that process. I think that in a way, there are aspects of it that are really positive. I know that some of our year 11 and year 13 students have made revision plans using AI that has fed back to them what they think they should be concentrating on. And they've said that they've trialed them and it's and adhered to it. And it's really helped them with their mock examinations. Equally, if a student is saving time by getting ideas for coursework from AI, then they are they're losing out on those critical thinking skills that are going to help them out in their exams and for deepened understanding of that subject as well. So I think it's something that we can't shy away from. We've really got to go in kind of feet first and make sure that we're at the cutting edge of it. But luckily at the school, I think that's something that we have form for. Whether it was that we went to all online teaching really or learning COVID, or it's the different learning platforms that we use now, or the fact that we have blended learning across all year groups. And I think that AI is the next step for that. I think that it's really interesting. I almost would sometimes, if I'm reading correspondence from parents and carers, sometimes I'd almost rather have a typo and know it's something that's come from that parent that they feel really deeply than if it has a comma space and it's come from an AI generated source. But equally, I think as long as we're communicating and people are getting their ideas across, then it doesn't matter so much in that capacity.
Yeah. I mean, and the good thing I'm using in inverted commas about AI is it's not there yet. I mean, I heard this anecdote about a dean of a faculty or maybe of a university in Belgium who used AI to generate a speech, and the quotes that he used were complete hallucinations by the AI. Yeah. So it was completely made up, much to his mortification. So, I mean, a little bit of me is glad that it's messing up still, so the human element is still needed.
We used AI to review aspects of our website because we had a new website last summer, and it was really interesting because some of the points it came back with were very pertinent about making sure that, you know, information was as clear as it could be, and then some things that we checked just weren't the case at all. So I think that it's a salient reminder for all of our young people that AI does make mistakes. And to be fair to the AI software companies, that's something, there's always a disclaimer that AI does make mistakes and needs checking as well.
Indeed. So coming to the end of our chat today, Paul, I'd like to know, just get a feel from you, what do you see coming up the road or down the road in terms of education and challenges and how are you and how are your leadership team getting ready for the next challenge.
So I think part of that challenge is preparing for possibly online examinations over the next 4 or 5 years. And I think that we've got to make sure that perhaps we are considering different models. I mean, as a country, not just at Stags, but also not losing out on students being able to write fluently and be creative with prose, and that kind of English writing skill isn't lost, whilst we're also perhaps making the most of it being that you actually, if you're using online testing, that you can check on subject content quicker and get that feedback faster, so that perhaps we know where to help students with their understanding. And I think that even though we pride ourselves on Stags on making sure that students are ready for their next steps and that we're not just getting ready for GCSEs and A-levels, that ultimately we are preparing students for evidencing their learning at the school through GCSEs and A-levels and BTEC. So I think it's really important that we think about how they're being assessed moving forwards with those aspects. And I think that the other main challenge for us in St Albans is that we have a birth rate that is impacting some of our primary schools in terms of intake. And I think that's something for all secondary school leaders to be mindful of when we're planning for collaboration over the next 5 to 10 years.
Brilliant. Paul, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today on The Parents Show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me in. Thank you.
So that was Paul Kershaw, head teacher of Stag School right here in St Albans. So we're going to take a little break on the parents show on Mix 92.6. We'll be back with more chat in just a few minutes, so stay tuned.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Thanks for staying with us on The Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
I'm Lydia L. Corey, and today I'm really, really pleased to be joined by Steph Brown, who is one of our new presenters on The Parents Show. Steph, how are you?
I'm really well. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. We're so glad you've joined the team, and it's so exciting to get a chance to get to know you today.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to getting stuck in and actually learning things myself as well, as much as finding out about kind of what's to come with my children and what's going on in the world around me. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Brilliant, brilliant, Steph. So I'd love our listeners to get to know you a little bit better. So tell us about yourself. Tell us where you live and about your family insofar as what you're happy to share.
So if you'd like to come to my house and do some cleaning and some washing, this is my address. No, I'm joking. I'm in North London. So I'm just in a place called Whetstone, which is very close to Barnet, which obviously is close to kind of Hertfordshire. So when I saw this was then an opportunity, I thought, well, it's really local to me. I spend a lot of time in Hertfordshire. So it's perfect, actually, and to maybe be across the wider as well, rather than local community all the time. I have two children, a very, very young, crazy age gap. There's 15 months between them, two girls.
Oh, is,
yeah. So they're technically now 2 and 1, which is wild. And I've got a dog and a cat. So I'm very busy with feeding lots of mouths. I feel like that's all I do. I clean and I feed them all the time. If it's not a dinner, it's a snack. If it's not a meal, it's a treat for an animal. So that's kind of my life currently, really. So I'm really looking forward to being able to actually talk to some real humans that I can have a conversation with that's maybe slightly more educational and intellectual.
Brilliant. That's great. Oh, sounds like a great setup, but you have your hands full, Steph.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about yourself and what you do and what you have done, because you've got a very close connection to St Albans, don't you?
Yeah, I had a business there for just over 12 years now. I closed in Jan 24, which was really sad. It was Gymboree. So I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there who were past customers, and I hope you're all well, and I miss all of you very, very much. Prior to that, I have always worked within the children's sector. I did theatre. I did theatre for children. I did musical theatre. That's kind of background, performing arts, all the way up until university. I then went and did a Montessori course. So I went and trained to become a Montessori teacher, which was really, really fascinating, actually, because there were so many links to being a teacher, working with children, but also having that moment to actually sit back and watch children and let them play, which I think was for the first time. It was usually prepare, play, be with the children, do everything for them, and, you know, blow the bubbles and be silly. But actually, when you then study it from a development point of view, it's really nice to let them be independent and let them work on their own. So that was really, really nice to do that. I'm really pleased that I went and studied that. And then throughout my time at Gymboree, obviously, you do your first aid, you do your child development courses, you do your theatre and education courses, those kind of things. And then I had my daughter late 23. And then, unfortunately, I closed in 24. So since then, I've become a mum, not working, very different role to play. And yeah, I've been doing that ever since. I then have my second daughter, and it's now 2026, and I'm ready to take the bull by the horns and get back out there and kind of be me again. I feel like, did I lose myself slightly? Maybe, because everything happened at once. I lost, obviously, the business, and I became a mom, and I also very tragically fell down my stairs. I don't know if I told you this actually, Olivia.
I
fell down my stairs at home. I broke my ankle in two places. I broke my daughter's leg, and I was pregnant with my other daughter. Yeah, so I've got a plate with pins and screws, but I was awake during my surgery because I wasn't allowed any lots and lots of medication stuff because I was pregnant. So I then had to learn to walk again. Daisy was in a cast. That was actually really traumatic. So I've had a very busy couple of years.
You really have. But they say it happens in threes. So the business, Daisy's leg and your ankle.
Yeah.
So you're done for a century now. You're done.
Yeah.
You're done.
Which is what I really hope. And I'd never broken a bone. And then I got to the hospital and they're like, you've really did some breaks. And I was like, yep, just fell down the stairs and... honestly, bizarre. Don't know how I did it.
Steph, that is really rough going. Because being pregnant with a little toddler on its own is a challenge. But mixing in there, breaking your ankle in two places, that must have been a very troubling, hard time to get through.
It was. Yeah, it was. It was really difficult. And do you know what? It was really difficult on my husband as well, because not only was he then the primary kind of financial person having to look after all of us, he then is also having to look after my daughter and also now having to look after me because I couldn't walk or do anything. So yeah, it was actually a really tough time now that I look back on it. But we're through it now. I have learned to walk again. I'm actually fine. Daisy is back to walking and stuff as normal. Everyone had their physio. And Alice is great. You would never know that she was inside and being rattled about down the stairs, I guess.
God, well, isn't, you know, biology is just a fantastic, your body is such a fantastic thing, isn't it? Just to protect your little baby in situations like that.
Yeah, I agree.
Wow.
Yeah, no, really
that's
lucky.
That's a lot to take on. So hopefully 2026, no more breaks, please.
No.
You could just focus on get. And I think what you said is beautifully honest about feeling like maybe you've lost yourself a little bit. I think you absolutely won't be the only mom who's felt that and thought that. And I have to say, I thought that as well. I really wanted to get back to work after, I think it was after 2-3 years, I felt very guilty for wanting to do that. And I didn't want to go back to work full time. I just wanted to go back to a setting where I was kind of known for what I was able to do, you know, as opposed to being a mom, which presents, you know, as you know, new challenges every single day, relentlessly new challenges, and you never feel like you get good at any of it. Well, I didn't certainly.
This is the exact conversation I had with my husband maybe 2-3 days ago. He had a performance review and obviously it was amazing and he's so good at his job, XYZ. And I was like, do you know what? If I was to get a performance review as a mother, I mean, I'll be doing a good job sometimes. We're just so harsh on ourselves. And actually, there's days where you think, if I could quit because I'm not doing very well, I would, because I don't feel like I'm enjoying it. And I think that's really honest to say, because it is really tough.
Yeah.
And I know so many people that do want to go back to work and really then enjoy their children because they've had that separation from them. And I do feel sometimes that, look, what happened to me with work and stuff was obviously very different to what others have gone through, and they're lucky to have their jobs or whatever, which is amazing. But I think because it was taken away from me, it made things just a little bit harder.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a little bit of a bereavement, I would say, losing the business like that. It's a lot to process, because especially, did you say 12 years you were running the business?
Yeah, 12 years. Yeah. Yeah, it's a long time. I agree. I mean, I guess it was kind of like my first baby, which does also sound a bit crazy. But I had to look after it. I had to be there every day, and it was hard, because obviously you step away to have a baby and you don't expect, I guess, things to happen in the way they do, and also so quickly.
Really,
it's so also, it, it yeah.
was Yeah, it was a sudden. So you had that to deal with as well, that it was a bit of a shock.
But do you know what? I'm really, looking back now, I'm really pleased that I didn't, you know, put my children into full-time education full-time nursery when they were still so little, because I'm very fortunate also now to have had that extended time with them.
Yeah.
Which is really nice. And some people don't get that because they do have to go back to work straight away or within the 9 months, or they're a business owner and they're working throughout and they don't really get a maternity leave anyway. So I'm also fortunate in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's you find pieces slot into place, don't they? And there's life is a way of working itself out for the best in the end. But there's so much in what you were saying. You were talking about your background doing drama. Can I come back to that again? So you said you did drama in your teens. Tell us about that. And do you have an outlet for kind of dramatic side again?
I mean, my husband would say yes. Do you know what? I always, from when you're little, you like all the dressing up. You're very into things like Disney and shows and performing. And I always wanted to be famous. And then I always wanted to be Kat Deeley. Do you remember Kat Deeley?
Yeah, yeah.
So she's very, very tall like me. She had beautiful long hair and she was presenting, I'm guessing, what, CDUK or one of those. And she used to do that thing with Ant and Dec, didn't she? And yeah. I loved her. And I always thought, yeah, that's who I want to be when I grow up. So I had always done theatre, always done dance, performing, that kind of stuff. And then thought, well, if I am going to pursue something, maybe I need to do something that I'm good at. I don't want to go and learn a new skill. So yeah, studied at college. I worked with a few big companies. I got to travel around the UK doing shows, which was really nice, up until I was about 20, 21. I think I was when I stopped. It must have been, because that's when I would have started with Gymboree, yeah. God, that seems like such a long time ago. That's crazy.
Wow.
I was so young. And yeah, no, I still see a lot of shows. I still am very much within the sector. A lot of my friends are as well. So I'm lucky to get, I don't know, cheap theatre tickets, or they call me and go, you'll never guess who's been cast in X, Y, and Z. And, you know, things like that, which is nice. And would I want to go back into it now? I'm not sure. I think I've been out of it for quite a time. And the whole theatre world has changed a lot.
Has it?
But that's why I kind of wanted to work with children, because it's such a nice performative thing for them and for yourself. Because I mean, obviously you've got children. I don't know if you've ever gone to go and watch one of their, I don't know, sing-alongs at school or whatever else, and you just feel so happy and proud for them. And that's just such an amazing feeling, and to know that you were the person that helped put that across is really nice.
Yeah,
which is kind of why I wanted to. Like, I remember being, I think I was like 5 or 6, and we did Jack and the Beanstalk at school, and I obviously was Jack.
Brilliant.
And because, you know, you've got to be the main part. And I just remember thinking, this is amazing, and everyone's come to watch me, and everyone's so proud, and I was so young. But yeah, I have such fond memories of things like that, which is really nice. And then obviously, as you get older, doing more shows and stuff. Maybe I should get back into it. I don't know. Every time I talk about theatre, I then go, maybe I should just have another stint of it. I don't know. I'm too old. Yeah.
Or maybe drama teacher. Maybe that's the next calling you have. But obviously, like, the radio is a bit of an outlet for that too, for your more artistic side.
100%. And do you know what? I think I'm such a talker. I don't know if you've noticed, you've not put a word in yet. But
oh, there's two of us in it, Steph. There's two of us in it.
Yeah. it means that, yeah, I think it's, you know, doing this is very creative in its own way. And being able to talk and chat and have fun, it's, I guess it is like a little mini performance, especially for the people that you're going to be interviewing. It's a really nice opportunity for them, especially for the parent show, to give their expertise and talk about something in their field that they love. And then that's where their passion comes from. So actually, everyone has that kind of performative excitement within them. It's just getting it out of them sometimes.
Yeah, I think spoken like a true drama head, because drama heads always believe everybody's got that in them, you know, somehow. Whereas I think I just don't think I've got it in.
You can do it.
We will start the Parent Show Drama Club. How about that?
There we go. All done. That'd be fantastic. Cute, though. We could do like a little, I don't know. I'm sure there's a drama school, a stage school, a lot of kids that would love to talk. And also parents, let's start a conversation about, you know, are there some reserved children out there? And do you feel as though, you know, encouraging them maybe to do these things? I mean, I never needed the encouragement, but my sister got forced, because if I was doing a club, my sister had to go to do the same club as me.
Right.
And she absolutely hated it. So actually, that's a really nice kind of, I guess, conversation that we could have about, do you encourage those kind of, I guess, extroverted, extracurricular things with your children? Do you feel like it's going to help them or not?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's like, how far do you push your introvert? You know, it's without actually scarring them, because, you know, you hear so many stories. It's like, my mother made me do a dance class and I never wanted to do it.
And I had to have all these sequins and gel in my hair, and I remember her brushing it out.
Oh my goodness. But and what other topics are you interested in covering? What really piques your interest?
So at the moment, I'm really into screen time, only because that's where I'm at with Daisy's 2.5 and she knows what the TV is now, and she just wants to watch whatever she sees, any kind of animation. So I'm kind of in that mists of, well, I used to watch TV and I remember sitting there watching TV, but everything is very, very different at the moment. It's very, very colourful. It's very quick and fast. There's lots of music and songs, because I tried to get her to watch things that I used to watch. Like, do you remember like Rosie and Jim? Bear in the Big Blue House and Arthur and all of those shows that we used to watch, Brum. And she just found them so boring. And do you know what? I get it, because in comparison to watching Peppa Pig, you know, it's night and day. So at the moment, we're trying to limit that and obviously push kind of more storytelling, more books, more physical play. And then that's kind of my next thing, more physical play, because I think in the post-COVID world, there's a lot of children that are quite happy to be at home and they're not on their bikes as much. And look, the world has changed. I do understand that it's not as safe maybe to be out. And obviously it gets dark at the moment a bit earlier, but I very, very rarely see children on bicycles anymore. And I was always out on my bike or at the park. So I think physical play and getting outside is also really, really important. But I'd like to hear from older parents as well, because I'd like to kind of, I guess, prepare myself for the future. What can I do to make that smooth transition into older children and teenagers? Because I'm very, very at the start of my journey.
Yeah, but it's brilliant. You know, with the Parent Show team now, we really have every age group covered. Obviously, when I started the Parent Show 15 years ago, my kids were 2 and just born. And I was exactly like you. I just wanted somebody to tell me, give me the tips about every phase, so I'd be somewhat prepared for the next challenge ahead. And it has completely served that purpose. I mean, it's just wonderful to get to talk to these amazing people who are so happy to share their expertise and their advice and their wisdom, and I'm just there picking up tips as I go along. So the Parent Show is great for doing that, you know, it really is. And that's why we started the show in the first place, not to maintain we're experts or to claim to be experts or to become experts, but really to have the experts on the show to share their expertise with us.
I agree.
Yeah.
And it's amazing you've been running for so long. It just shows you that it, even through changes of generations and, you know, disasters and whatever else, it's still something that people always come back to, no matter how different the parenting style is. You know, you've been going for so long, which is amazing.
It is fantastic. We're very lucky, you know, to be able to keep it going for so long. But and now it's a really exciting moment because we've got a brand new team joining in, which is just fantastic. Loads of wonderful ideas between you and Becky and Elisa. We've got so many sparky, wonderful, bright ideas coming up in the show in the next 12 months. I'm just really excited about what we'll get up to.
Same.
Brilliant.
I'm really looking forward to it.
It's just fabulous to have you on the team, Steph. Thanks a million for signing up and for agreeing to it, and looking forward to lots of interesting shows with you.
No, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me today. I really appreciate it.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.